Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we are learning Masechet Megillah. We find ourselves about halfway down on Daf Chaf Tet Amud Aleph, that's 29a. We are on the second to last of the medium wide lines, right at the bottom of the Rashi column. This series of recordings is a joint project of OU Torah, the OU Department of Synagogue Services, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. We have been discussing synagogues and various different aspects about synagogues, and right now we've been doing a little bit of agadata about the holiness of synagogues, particularly the holiness of the synagogues in Babylonia. In our previous end of our previous recording, we talked about how sometimes God's presence, the Shekhinah, would visit certain synagogues in Babel, particularly the synagogue in Hutzal and the synagogue called Shafi Yativ in Naharda. So now we have a source for a teaching that is often talked about, which is that a synagogue is called a mikdash ma'at, a mini temple or a mini sanctuary. We often refer to synagogues as mikdash ma'at, and that the source for that comes from a pasuk in Yechezkel, chapter 11. It's Yechezkel chapter 11, verse 16. So Perek Yud Aleph, pasuk Tet Zayin, and the pasuk says Lechein Amar. Therefore, Hashem said, Ko Amar Hashem. So says Hashem, Elokim ki hichaktim bagoyim, when I push you away into the far places of the nations, v'chi hafitzotim ba'aratzot, and I scatter you among other lands. Then, at that time, when you're in exile, va'ahi lahem lemikdash me'at, I will be for you a mini temple in those lands that you are in, ba'aratzot asher ba'usham. So the Gemara here quotes the end of it, va'ahi lahem lemikdash me'at, I will be for you for a mini temple. Now, it sounds like from the pshat that it's referring to Hashem himself will play that role, but Amar Rabbi Yitzchak says, Eilu batei kenesiot ubatei midrashot shebavavel. These are the synagogues and study halls that are in Bavel. So first of all, it's interesting that it's not just a synagogue, but also a study hall. Of course, Rabbi Yitzchak only says particularly they're the ones in Bavel, but we extend that teaching to all of our synagogues in the various diasporas in which we live. Rabbi Lezer has a different teaching. Zeb Beit Rabbeinu Shebavavel. This is the house of our teacher, that is, Beis Rabbeinu, the house of our master, who is in Bavel. In other words, it is the home of the Gadol Hador. So rather than identifying the synagogues and the study halls as the places that will stand in for the survival of the Jewish people, just like the temple did, he says it's the Gadol Hador, the house of the greatest teacher of the generation. Okay. Darash Rava. Rava says something similar. He is Dorish, a certain verse in Tehillim chapter 90, Tehillim Tzadi. Mai dichtiv Hashem ma'ona tahayita lanu. Here David says, Hashem, you were our ma'on. That is also kind of like a fortress or a place of refuge. Elu batei kenesiot ubatei midrashot. Similarly, these are the synagogues and the study halls, that they form a ma'on, a place of sanctuary for the Jewish people. Amar Abaye, so Abaye said, Meresh, in the beginning, have a garisna bebeta, when I learned Torah, and by garisna I think it means mostly reviewing. He's reviewing things that he learned already. So when he was reviewing his learning, he did it in his own home. Umatzlina bebe knishta, and I davened in shul. Kevan deshmatle, when I heard this teaching that we just did, Deka Amar David Hashem Ahavti Ma'on Beitach. Actually, it's a slightly different teaching, but related to the word Ma'on. Hashem, I love the sanctuary of your home, Ma'on, the refuge. Then he says Havigarisna Bebekinishta. Then I started to do my learning in the shul. Also, he wanted to do his learning and his davening in the same place. There are some versions of this. There's some confusion about this and other versions about what should have happened. There seems to be an example of someone who then started, if you want to learn and daven in one place, you could also do that at home. And also, it would seem like you should learn in the Beit Midrash and not in the Beit Knesset. But in any case, he felt that if the shul was a ma'on, he should also learn in the shul as well. We saw earlier that it was a custom that the children's schools met in synagogues as well, so that if you went into a shul, which we'll see in a minute when we talk about a kapandaria, about using the shul as a shortcut, that if you went into a shul and you weren't learned, you could ask a child who was there to recite the verses that he was memorizing at that time. So it sounds like the children were learning in the shuls as well. Okay, we continue on. Tanya, we have a learning in a braita. Rabbi Eliezer HaKapar Omer, he says, Atidin, in the future, Batei Knesiot u'batei Midrashot, the synagogues and study halls, Shebibavel, that are in Babylonia, Sheyikbu'u be'eretz Yisrael, they will be established in the land of Israel. In other words, they won't be destroyed or abandoned, they will be moved to the land of Israel. So you'll take, and this is something that Jews sometimes do, like witness like the Washington Heights community, where they basically took their everything, their customs and everything that they did in Germany and just moved them to New York. So they would do the same thing, they would move them from New York to the land of Israel. But in this case, it sounds like almost more like a miraculous moving, as if the synagogues themselves will be uprooted from their places and transported to the land of Israel. Shenemar, as it says, this is in Yirmiyahu chapter 46, Ki kitavor beharim, just like Har Tavor is in the mountains, Uche Carmel Bayam, and Har Carmel, that's how they're reading it, is in the sea, Yavo, he shall come. Now, it seems like, in this case, this is a Jeremiad, it's a prophecy of Yirmiyahu, that Nebuchadnezzar is going to come to Jerusalem. But they understand it differently. Rashi explains that what he says is that Carmel, which is a mountain, is going to move over the water, or over the sea. And that Har Tavor, both these mountains, are going to uproot themselves and come from their original locations to a new location. And let's see how they understand it. V'alo dvarim kal v'chomer. Is this not a kal v'chomer? That is an a fortiori argument. Uma Tavor v'Karmel, just like these two mountains, Tavor and Carmel, shelo ba'u ela l'fisha'a, they move themselves temporarily, lilmod Torah, in order to learn Torah. So the whole reading of the verse is that Har Tavor and Har Carmel uprooted themselves from their location and went over the sea in order to be there when the Torah was given. It's a very fanciful reading of the pasuk. Nikba'im be'eretz Yisrael, and they then replanted themselves from where they were and they replanted themselves in the land of Israel. But taken Yisiodu b'tei Midrashot, the synagogues and study halls shekorinu marbitzin b'hem Torah, in which you are already reading and improving Torah in them, al achat kama v'kama. That's the abbreviation in the middle of the line there. Ayin aleph kaf vav stands for al achat kama v'kama. All the more so that if these mountains were to come to learn Torah and plant themselves in the land of Israel, so for sure a synagogue and a study hall would do so. A very interesting and fanciful midrash that definitely has more depth to it than we have time to explore right now. Similar teaching, but slightly different. Darash Bar Kapara, Rabbi Kapara, Bar Kapara was Doresh, he expounded. Mai Dichtiv, what is written, and this is in Tehillim Samechet 68, Lama Teratzdun Harim Gavnunim. The meaning of this verse is, it's a kind of an apostrophe. King David is talking to the mountains, and he says to them, why do you look down, O high mountains, Harim Gavnunim are high-peaked mountains, why do you look down on the mountain Asher Chamad Hashem, that Hashem has chosen, desired for his resting place? In other words, the other high-peaked mountains are looking down on Mount Sinai. They're like despising Mount Sinai. So the language of Harim Gavnunim means high mountains, you know, peaks, snow-peaked caps at the top. But the Gemara is going to read it in an opposite way. Uchtiv Hatam, it's written in the Torah when it's referring to things that invalidate a Kohen for serving in the temple. All these sorts of physical blemishes make a Kohen invalid to serve in the temple. And the first, some of them, or a couple of them are O Gibein Odak. So Gibein refers to a hunchback. So someone who has their back is all hunched over cannot do the divine service. But they related the word gibein to gavnunim, because it also has a gimel bet nun. Now gavnunim means the opposite. It's high-peaked, lofty mountain. And gibein as a hunchback is someone who is actually shorter than they would be because they're all hunched over. So Amar Rav Ashi says, Shmamina, learn from this, Haiman diyahir, the one who is arrogant, balmumhu, is actually the one who is invalidated due to his due to something that's wrong with him. So the mountains, who were so tall, this is relates to a story that we all heard probably when we were in kindergarten, that Hashem wanted to give the Torah on Har Sinai because it was a humble mountain, and all the taller mountains wanted to... it looks like we skipped a line. I apologize. Let's do this. Let's go back and do this again. Lama Darash Bar Kapara. Let's go back to Darash Bar Kapara. Mai dichtiv lama taratzdun harim gavnunim. Yatzda bat kol v'amra lahem. A heavenly voice came out and said, lama tirtzu din im Sinai. Why are you levying a court case with Har Sinai? Kulchem bale mumin. You are the ones that are blemished. Atem, kulchem balmumim atem, you are the ones that are blemished, etzel Sinai, compared to Sinai. Tivhacha gavnunim, there it writes, high lofty mountains, gavnunim, uchtivhatam ogibein odak, and here it says, hunchbacked, or very, very short. Amar Rav Ashi, shmamina haiman diyahir balmumhu, the one who is arrogant is actually the one who is blemished. So the story that we all heard when we were kids is that all the other mountains argued to Hashem, we are the ones that the Torah should be given on us because we are tall and high and lofty. And Har Sinai was the humble mountain that was low down and didn't say anything and didn't participate in that whole boasting about how tall and lofty he was. And Hashem chose the humble mountain to give the Torah to. This version, and it's not clear exactly how it goes, seems to indicate oppositely. It seems to indicate that Hashem chose Har Sinai to begin with, and then the other mountains came and interrogated Har Sinai, or Hashem about Har Sinai, saying, how could you give the mountain on him? He's so little, he's so small, he's so hunchbacked. And then their response was, no, you are the ones who are unworthy of getting the Torah, not Har Sinai, even though it's a small and unremarkable mountain. But what the psul that you have, the blemish that you have, is that you're arrogant and you think you're so great. Okay, so that's the story. We continue on. Next line, Ein Osino Toka Pendaria. This is from the Mishnah, that you're not supposed to make a synagogue a shortcut. You're not supposed to cut through the synagogue. My Kapandaria, what is a Kapandaria? Amarava Kapandaria Kishma. It is as its name suggests. So that's, the Gemara is not very impressed with this. It doesn't think it's very helpful. My Kishma, what Rava, what Hada doesn't help us. We don't know what it means. What does it mean that it's like its name? Kimanda Amar, so the Gemara answers, it's like one who says, Ademakifna adare eul baha. So Kapandaria is these Ademakifna adare. It's kind of like a mashup of the words Ademakifna adare, which means instead of going around these buildings, I'm going to go through this one. Ademakifna means to do a hekif, to do a circuit. I'd have to go all the way around to the other side to get in. Instead, eul baha, I'll go through this one. That's what it means. Amar Rabbi Abahu. Rabbi Abahu says, "Im haya shvil meikara mutar." If there was a path there before the synagogue was built, and that was how he used to go, and now they put a synagogue there, and it's in his way, he's permitted to still use that pathway that he's used to, even though it goes through the synagogue. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says, "Hanichnas al menat shelo laasot kapandaria mutar." One who goes into a shul and does not plan to use it as a shortcut, then it's mutar la soto kapandari, then it's permitted for him to make it a kapandari. So if you go into shul to daven, and then you decide that you want to go out the other door because it's closer to where you want to go after davening, that's perfectly fine. V'amar Rav Chelbo, Amar Rav Huna, Rav Chelbo said the name of Rav Huna, ha'nichnas lebeit ha'kneset lehit palel, one who goes into the shul in order to daven, it says, mutar la soto kapandaria. It is permitted for him to use it as a shortcut. And in the Hagos HaGorah, he adds mitzvah. He's actually supposed to do it. And the reason he does that is because the verse seems to indicate that he should. Shenemar, as it says in Yechezkel Memvav, uvivo am ha'aretz lifnei Hashem b'moadim, when the Jewish people would come before Hashem, that is, they would come up to the temple on the festivals, haba derech shar tzafon, the one who would come on the northern gate, lishtachavot, to bow down, Yatza derech shar negev, would go out the southern gate. And the verse continues to go on and give other examples. Now, I suspect that this had to do with a form of crowd control. You know, they wanted people to come in one exit and go out the other exit, so they didn't have to go back and block the exits for the people that were coming in. But here, they're using it as an idea that once you're coming to serve Hashem, it's permitted for you at least to go out the other way, because that's the way they used to do it in Beit HaMikdash. Perhaps it's even a mitzvah. Maybe we would suggest that when the Gemara says it's a mitzvah, it's because if you go into a room and then you go back out the same way you came in, maybe it looks like you regret that you went in there. You like go in and you're like, oh, I don't want to be here, and then you back out the same door. Whereas if you go out the other door, it shows a certain like chavivut, like a love or respect that you wanted to travel the whole room and not back out the door that you just came in. But I don't know. I guess it all depends on how you do it. Okay, last section before we get to the next Mishnah. Alubo asavim, we said in a neglected and abandoned synagogue, if grass starts to grow in the dirt floors of the synagogue, lo yitlosh mifnei agmat nefesh. Don't pluck out the grass because you want to leave it there. Then it makes it look more desolate and people will be upset that the synagogue is destroyed, and hopefully they'll come and rebuild it. Ve'atanya, but did we not learn in a braita? Eno tolosh tolesh umachil. You may not pluck the grass in order to feed it to your animal, aval tolesh umaniach, but you can cut the grass and leave it there. Kitnanami, so we learn that also in a Mishnah, matnitin tolesh umachil tnan. So we should learn it here as well, that it only refers to using the grass in order to feed your animals, but if you wanted to pluck it up and leave it there, you could. Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, Beit HaKvarot Ein Nohagin Bahen Kalut Rosh. In a cemetery, we also do not conduct ourselves in a light-headed way, in a foolish sort of way. Now, we use the same, we talked about this earlier related to synagogues, that one of the limitations on how you use synagogues and sell synagogues is that they cannot be used for a Kalut Rosh activities. And here it gives other examples of what activities that seem to be frivolous would be. Ein marin bahem behema, you don't let an animal graze in there. Ve'ein molichim behen amat maim, and you don't direct a stream through a cemetery. Ve'ein melaktin behen asavim, and you don't gather grass in the cemetery. Ve'im liket, and if you do gather grass, sor fun bimkoman, then you have to burn it. Mipnei kavod metim, because of the honor of the dead. Ahaya, the Gemara is astonished, wait a minute. Ilema asefa, if I were to say that this last piece, because of the honor of the dead, refers to the end of the Mishnah, kevan shesorfan bimkoman, when I burn the grass, my kvod metim ika, what honor of the dead is there? That's not honoring the dead to burn the grass in the synagogue. Ella, rather read it aresha. In other words, you shouldn't do frivolous activities in a cemetery, mipnei kvod metim, because of the honor of the dead. Now, in the halacha, they also include the other activities in Kalut Rosh that we mentioned related to synagogues, such as eating and drinking and sleeping and other of these kinds of activities would all be included as well. Now, you could also argue, I don't know if it's 100% halachically required, that eating and drinking in a synagogue is not allowed because of Loeg LaRash, that you are mocking the dead who no longer have the ability to eat and drink. But maybe that might be included as well, as well as also an issue with Tumah there. So there may be a number of reasons not to eat and drink in a synagogue, but we would include them here among the category of items that are kalut rosh, or frivolousness. That takes us all the way down to the Mishnah. We are four lines from the bottom, and we'll continue in our next recording. Have a wonderful day.